Came out of sickness, so my voice is not great, and everything sounds really loud in my head, so I may not even speak very loudly. But it's really cool to be able to kind of provide an update, because last summer, First Congregational, along with South Hills Christian, did one of the best things you could do for our agency, which is bring together a group of people to provide furniture and household items for an apartment for a family arriving. We have families arriving every week. Last year, we saw at least 540 refugees come just through our office, and we're one of three in Fort Worth. And so whenever we have one person on staff who's responsible for coordinating housing and filling it with furniture and getting all those goods in, so when a church comes in to provide those items, it's a huge help for our agency and our staff and also for our clients, because instead of us using their money to buy furniture and household items, we were able to give that family that money up front to use for rent or other, or like uniforms for school and things like that. And so actually the family that you served last summer was a Somali family of a mom with seven children, and I'm actually a mentor for that family. So I work with them on a weekly basis. For at least an hour and a half. I live in Rome, Texas, so I don't get to see them as often as I would like to. But I can't give too much detail on like how their situation is, because privacy is really important. But I can say the girls are just wonderful, and they were so excited when a Somali American was voted into office in Minnesota. And one of them is like, they really want to go to college now. I can identify two or three who are doing really well in school. And also doing really well with English. Mom is still struggling with English, and it's hard because they still have family back in Somalia as well and in Kenya, so there's also that, dealing with that. So we're hoping to see First Congregational also maybe adopt another family again and just providing those initial items like they did last summer. So that's really, we're really thankful for that, and we love our churches who step up in that way, because it's a huge help to us, a huge help to our clients. And so this morning, after this hour during Sunday school, my coworker Jean-Claude, who is a former refugee himself, will be here, and we would love to answer any questions people may have. I know people are a little curious about what's going on in resettlement right now. We're a little curious about what's going on in resettlement right now. But we'd love to answer any questions you have, and then also just to hear Jean-Claude's own experience, because he lived in a camp for 13 years before he and his family got here in Fort Worth in 2009. So he'll speak from a better perspective than I could in talking about camps and how the process to get here. So, yeah, that's kind of what I have to offer this morning. But we'll go ahead and read the scriptures from Deuteronomy. So now, O Israel, what does the Lord your God require of you? Only to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all God's ways, to love God, to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, and to keep the commandments of the Lord your God and God's decrees that I am commanding you today for your own well-being. For the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, the great God, mighty and awesome, who is not partial and takes no bribe, who executes justice for the orphan and the widow, and who loves the strangers, providing them food and clothing. You shall also love the stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. Then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it that we saw you sick or in prison and visited you? And the king will answer them, truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me.
I've got a poem. We Palestinians suffer from an incurable disease called hope. Hope for liberation and independence. Hope for a normal life where we shall be neither heroes nor victims. Hope to see our children go to school without danger. Hope for a pregnant woman to give birth to a living baby in a hospital and not to a dead child in front of a military control post. Hope that our poets will see the beauty of the color red in roses rather than in blood. Hope that this land will recover its original name, Land of Hope and Peace. Thank you for carrying with us this banner of hope. I don't know about you, but I find the photo on the cover of your bulletin to be really powerful. In fact, why don't you pull it out for a moment, and let's reflect together on this photograph. In the midst of a sea of humanity, we see refugees sleeping on bags and blankets, and a tent in the middle. Near the tent, a mother wearing hijab, sitting perhaps praying next to her child. And on the other side of the tent, do you see the young man in the sun who's staring out into the abyss, perhaps wondering how people who are somebody from somewhere came to be here? While inside a tent, a couple kissing so tenderly. His arms are wrapped around her, her arm is resting on his shoulders. This moment of affection, of tenderness and love, in the midst of what had to be months, even years of chaos. We live in an age where ideas travel around the world at the click of a button. The goods that we consume come from all over the world. We enjoy Kenyan coffee and Chinese manufactured smartphones. We welcome goods as inexpensively as possible, of course, but perhaps not as much the people connected with them. And meanwhile, the combination of political strife, extremism, militarism, geopolitics and environmental desecration have created 60 million refugees worldwide. In some cases, they are homeless with no home for them to go back to, or someone else living in what used to be their home. 60 million human beings. Now, to get a sense of that number, imagine the entire population of California and Florida combined. And half of that number are children. Think of the entire population of Texas and of Arkansas as children wandering in search of a home. It's so important that we not only talk about such people, but that we amplify their voices. So I'm going to share with you a poem by Somali-born poet Worson Shire. And I just want to say that before I read it, there's a word that she uses in her poem that I never speak. However, I want her voice to be heard with integrity, so I'm going to read her poem as she has written it. That's a poem of some length, and I will let you know when I'm at the end of it. No one leaves home unless home is the mouth of a shark. You only run for the border when you see the whole city running as well. Your neighbors running faster than you, breath bloody in their throats. The boy you went to school with, who kissed you dizzy behind the old tin factory, is holding a gun bigger than his body. You only leave home when home won't let you stay. No one leaves home unless home chases you, fire under feet, hot blood in your belly. It's not something you ever thought of doing until the blade burnt threats into your neck. And even then, you carried the anthem under your breath, only tearing up your passport in an airport toilet, sobbing as each mouthful of paper made it clear that you wouldn't be going back. You have to understand that no one puts their children in a boat unless the water is safer than the land. No one burns their palms under trains, beneath carriages, No one spends days and nights in the stomach of a truck feeding on newspaper unless the miles traveled mean something more than journey. No one crawls under fences. No one wants to be beaten. Pity. No one chooses refugee camps or strip searches where your body is left aching, or prison because prison is safer than a city of fire, and one prison guard in the night is better than a truckload of men who look like your father. No one could take it. No one could stomach it. No one's skin would be tough enough to hear, "Go home, blacks, refugees, dirty immigrants, asylum seekers, sucking our country dry. Niggers with their hands out, they smell strange, savage, messed up their country, and now they want to mess ours up." How do the words, the dirty looks roll off your backs? Maybe because the blow is softer than a limb torn off, or the words are more tender than 14 men between your legs. Leave your clothes behind. Crawl through the desert, wade through the oceans, drown, say, be hunger, fed, forget pride. Your survival is more important. No one leaves home until home is a sweaty voice in your ear saying, "Leave. Run away from me now." I don't know what I've become, but I know that anywhere is safer than here. End quote. Like many of you, I have been dismayed and angry to hear politicians, elected officials, apparently trying to outdo each other in being the most heartless and cruel when addressing the global refugee crisis, in objectifying the other, in dividing the world by race, religion, citizenship, and national status, all in the name of so-called national security. When we see these things happening, we must speak out. Over the past months, this past fall, we have heard politicians compare refugees to rabid dogs. Politicians suggest requiring Muslims to register with the government. Elected officials continue to offer cruel and dangerous statements about refugees. When we see these things, we must speak out. And it's not only politicians. Meanwhile, the majority of Americans now want to keep all Syrian refugees out of our country. Islamophobia continues to increase. When we see these things happening, we must speak out and keep speaking out. Because as American citizens, we must never forget who we are. We are a nation of immigrants. And as Christians in the church today, have we forgotten the clear, consistent imperative of our faith that we love God, self, and all neighbors around the world as ourselves? America First has no basis in Christianity. We think of who we are as people of the Christian faith. And to be clear, I'm referring now not as our country, but as people who gather in a church. A wandering Aramean named Moses was our ancestor. A fleeing baby is our savior. We are strangers in a strange land. When we forget who we are, I fear for us. When we can no longer hear the cries of our neighbors or see flimsy rubber rafts landing on rocky shores, children shivering, parents weeping when their feet hit solid ground. Hundreds of thousands, millions of vulnerable, courageous, strong human beings walking for thousands of miles with nothing in search of refuge and a future with hope. It may not always be clear, but I take pretty seriously my call to be a preacher of the gospel, a proclaimer of the good news, which is to say that I am forever looking for good news and that I always believe there is good news, even though it may be hard to find. Even when, at first glance, there seems to be nothing but bad news. The truth is, the good news is, that God is always working. Even in the midst of the most God-awful situations. If you never hear me say anything, I hope you hear me say that. God is always at work, discovering new life in the midst of disappointment and failure. From the small picture of our individual lives to the big picture of our planet and of all existence, God is always working, imagining healing and growth after heartache and loss, offering the hope of resurrection, even at death's door. And though it may be two steps forward, one step back, and that one step may feel like 10 steps, let us never forget that we're always moving forward, even if progress is more of a zigzag than a straight line. It's been said that the arc of the moral universe is long and it bends toward justice. Yes, I believe that's true. However, it doesn't bend toward justice automatically. We must bend it along with the help of God. God is powerful, and we are powerful. And love and hope are restored. Take one more look at that photo. To look at this photo is to see the resiliency of love, the power of love. To look at this photo is to proclaim, the refugees will win. Love will win. Life will win. Because love always triumphs. The couple in the tent sharing that tender kiss are refugees, yes, no doubt. They never stopped loving their home, but they love their lives more. And I like to believe that they cling to the stubborn hope of a better life. Surely there is love and tenderness and hope in that kiss. And in their hope, there's hope for all of us. Let us proclaim the good news of the gospel. Let us proclaim our stubborn faith that there is a love that shines in the darkest places of suffering. There is a love that stands in the midst of turmoil, that stands up and declares with a kiss that tenderness, kindness, and affection shall prevail. Let us never forget the power of love. And let us carry right along with 60 million refugees, the banner